Good afternoon, political analyst Daniel Silk. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thanks very much.
Daniel, why has South Africa been so silent on Zimbabwe? Why is SADC so silent on Zimbabwe?
Well, I certainly think that from South Africa's point of view, we've seen very little willingness on the part of the South African government to involve themselves with domestic political issues in Zimbabwe for some time. It's not just on the current levels of unrest that we see in the country, but even during the Mugabe era, we saw South Africa really take a position where it simply didn't want to get involved in the internal affairs of its northern neighbor. It just rather coldly, in a sense, was prepared to go through the broader diplomatic channels without really taking it added interest. And it just seems as though South Africa once again looks as though it is adopting a policy of non-interference. I suppose the question is whether the country should interfere or not, and if it was to interfere, in what way would it interfere? The only way we've seen South Africa take some sort of stance is in the apparent rejection of a request for an emergency loan to the value of about $1 billion, and that's been refused by South Africa. So at the very least, there's no financial assistance currently being offered to Zimbabwe to get them out of the economic rut. But when it comes to issues of human rights domestically within the country, when it comes to issues relating to the use of the security forces to clamp down on dissent within Zimbabwe, South Africa, and for that matter SADC, and for that matter the African Union, look as though they are impotent or simply unwilling to really take this matter any further.
Why is it, I mean, at what point do you think African countries will
do something, yeah,
will ever intercede or get involved in the politics, the unhealthy or the bad politics of other countries? Or do you think that that's just not something within the frame of reference of the continent?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to provide for the African Union to really have any real clout when it comes to human rights abuses and domestic unrest within any of these countries. I think even from the African Union's point of view, these are domestic policy issues and they should be dealt with via the domestic political systems. The only time, of course, that the African Union in a sense does wake up is when there are gross abuses of electoral law, and we've seen to some degree question marks being raised about the recent election in the DRC, for that matter, which has raised the ire of the African Union. But frankly, countries are largely on their own, and the African Union still does countenance far too much abuse domestically within many African states. The Zimbabwe example being just one of perhaps many that are ongoing at the moment in terms of internal instability. So, you know, for all of the talk about, one can be somewhat cynical about it, for all of the talk about, you know, the African Brotherhood and the extension in a sense of democracy and accountability and self-policing on the African continent, when push comes to shove on some of these very serious electoral abuse issues and human rights abuse issues across the continent, it's still largely very much left to the countries themselves and, unfortunately, to their poor citizens to have to deal with the aftermath rather than rely upon some sort of safety valve from the AU.
Daniel, I understand and hear what you're saying about this being an internal issue. I just wonder at what point that internal issue, when it starts to have such massive impacts on your neighbors like South Africa and immigration, at what point does it stop being such an internal issue? At what point do you get involved? At what point do you start having connections and trying to make an impact?
Well, I certainly think that if there was an ongoing series of internal breakdown within Zimbabwe, in other words, if there was unrest and loss of life continuing unabated for perhaps a week or a number of weeks, that would ultimately force South Africa, together with SADC and the larger bodies, to convene some sort of emergency meeting on Zimbabwe. And I think from South Africa's point of view, and you know, you look at it, you know, look at it just from how, you know, diplomats operate, they'll be watching closely the position in Zimbabwe. But if it calms down, if it quietens down, if the level of repression looks as though it's easing off, It is likely that South Africa then won't see this as a definitive turning point in which they should call some sort of emergency meeting. So I think some time is being given ultimately for Zimbabwe to somehow come out of the current internal strains. Again, this will depend upon the level of internal combustion in that society at the moment. And again, one hates to sound as though, you know, one is sort of cynical when it comes to this, but, you know, if loss of life can be kept to a minimum, then there won't be intervention. If loss of life is substantial and if there is widespread repression on an ongoing basis for the next X number of months, then indeed, that's the tipping point. But I'm afraid to say, to answer your question, it's a very slow and unsatisfactory tipping point that needs to be required before there's any kind of intervention, even moderate intervention from these bodies, including South Africa.
Daniel, very quickly, because we don't have much time, I'm just so interested. There was so much hype about Mnangagwa when he took power and Mugabe left, and there was a sort of
a soft coup.
There was an Arab Spring. There was a bit of hope. Where did it suddenly just go so wrong?
Yeah, I think the weakening of institutions within Zimbabwe is one factor, and I think that we've simply seen a lack of political will from ZANU-PF to really restore the credibility of institutions in Zimbabwe. But the bottom line, I suppose, is that the economic plight of the country was unable to be rescued over the course of the last year. Again, the breakdown was so severe. A lack of credibility in government in particular, the ZANU-PF once again could not really adequately convince foreign investors in what has been a relatively short period of time that a major rescue effort is needed. I think a lack of credibility within the ruling party has led partially to this particular breakdown. And of course, that election that was held in Zimbabwe, also disputed internally by the Zimbabwean opposition, that didn't help matters also in restoring credibility. Again, I think foreign investors have been sitting on the sidelines. They weren't convinced necessarily about the outcome of that election, and they were looking for greater internal political stability within Zimbabwe. It hasn't come about. The current spate of unrest has again deteriorated the position when it comes to attempting to find outside economic investment into the country. And it really has plunged Zimbabwe back into the dark days of the Mugabe era, when the country was largely isolated from economic assistance. It's a very serious matter for Zimbabwe currently, and it obviously has a knock-on effect into South Africa, with the potential of further economic refugees making their way across our border here. Again, it's something that I think we'll have to watch all as analysts over the next few months or so. But I think for Mr. Mnangagwa now, his own regime has become more vulnerable. He himself may be vulnerable to further political machinations within his own ruling ZANU-PF. He's been reluctant to return home, by the way. He's been overseas during this entire week of unrest. And clearly he himself hasn't wished to face the music. So I think watch the position in Zimbabwe. It's very, very volatile. And I do see at the end of the day an improvement for the country, but it will take both sides, all three sides, the rump of ZANU-PF, the military in Zimbabwe, and the opposition forces within that country, to really form some sort of unified approach to governance and share power before I think foreign investors can be convinced that this is now a rebirth for the country.
Yeah, very interesting. Daniel, to your knowledge, has South Africa ever intervened in the politics of another African country?
Well, South Africa has intervened, I think, in Lesotho and to some degree in Swaziland. And I think there's even been military assistance to try and restore order in those two small entities. In the case of both those two small entities, it's a little bit easier in a sense to justify and practically operate in terms of some sort of military or security assistance. But this has not been the case in any of South Africa's other more major neighbors. And I don't think that South Africa at this stage really wants to get embroiled in anything outside of our own borders. Remember, the offer of assistance to Zimbabwe, the financial assistance, was turned down because the answer was, we haven't got any money to assist you with.
Yeah.
And I think that as we move into a 5-month election campaign now till May, the last thing South Africa wants is to have any kind of external border crisis or external crisis of its own forces in another country. I also don't think it's advisable, to be perfectly honest. This is a matter that really requires all the domestic political forces in Zimbabwe to get together around the table. It's not a matter for even a powerful neighbor like South Africa to even countenance some sort of intervention. I don't think it will help the position at all.
Interesting. One of our listeners actually pointing out one of the great ironies that it's unsigned, but it says, but when it comes to Israel, which they have no connection to, they have a hell of a lot to say. And actually, South Africa does seem to have like quite an interest in Israel, which really it doesn't have a connection to. Anyhow, Daniel Silk, thank you very, very much for your time. It is always a pleasure, and I feel very, very appreciative that you have shared your insight with us this afternoon.
Thank you. Lovely to be with you guys.
God bless, Daniel. Bye-bye.